When it comes to murder, nighttime's the right time. So when Milo calls me, I often find myself driving to crime scenes on dark LA streets. This time, the phone rang just after 9 a.m. Lovely Sunday in May. Robin and I and Blanche, our little French bulldog, had taken a leisurely 2-mile walk, followed by a pancake breakfast. Robin was washing, I was drying. Blanche's sausage body was prone on the kitchen floor as she snored and let out periodic dream squeaks. My phone, on vibrate, bounced on the kitchen counter, Milo's number on the screen. I said, "What's up, big guy?" Detective 2, Moses Reed, said,
"Actually, it's me, Doc. He asked me to phone you."
"Busy, huh?"
"We're all busy. This is utterly horrible."
Reed's a terse young man. It takes a lot to get him using adverbs. I sat down and listened as he explained, images tumbling into my brain. Robin turned from the sink, pretty eyebrows arching. I shook my head and mouthed, "Sorry," and said, "Where, Mo?"
"Private road called Ascot Lane off Benedict Canyon. Easy to miss, kind of like your street, but this one's more like a big driveway, only goes to one house."
He sighed.
"Half mile north of the Beverly Hills border."
But for a couple thousand feet, someone else's problem. I said, "Give me half an hour."
"Whenever you get here, Doc. No one's leaving for a while."
In the movies, when detectives encounter terrible things, they frequently banter and tell tasteless jokes. That may be because screenwriters, or the people who pay them, are emotionally shallow. Or the scribes haven't taken the time to hang out with real detectives. I've found that the men and women who work homicide tend to be thoughtful, analytic, and sensitive. Despite a certain gruffness, that certainly applies to Milo. My best friend has closed over 350 murders, and he's never lost his empathy or his sense of outrage. Notifying families still rips at him. He eats too much, sleeps poorly, and often neglects himself while working 2-3 days in a row. Once you stop caring, you're useless. Milo leads by example, so the same approach is taken by the 3 younger D's who work with him when he can pry them away from other assignments. When he can't, it's just him, and sometimes me. Rules are often bent. Milo was a gay soldier when gay soldiers didn't exist, a gay cop when LAPD was still raiding gay bars. Things have changed, but he continues to disdain stupid regulations and often overlooks social niceties in a paramilitary organization that prizes conformity. Murder solve rates have dropped, but his rate remains the highest in the department, so the brass looks the other way. This morning, the sense of anxious gloom I've seen so many times at murders, stiff posture, tight faces, sharp but defeated eyes, extended to the 2 half-backed-sized uniformed officers blocking the entrance to Ascot Lane from Benedict Canyon. They'd been given my personal info and the Seville's tags, but checked my ID anyway before the bigger one said,
"Go on in, Doctor,"
in a defeated voice. To get to them, I'd nosed past half a dozen journalists stationed on Benedict as they tried to rush the Seville before being shooed by another pair of cops. Different emotional climate for members of the press, a heightened energy bordering on ebullience. Misfortune is the mother's milk of journalism, but with the exception of war correspondents, those who suckle the teats of tragedy are rarely forced to confront evil directly. I'd kept the Seville's windows open, and as I climbed the road, a bee swarm of words followed me. "Who's he? Vintage caddy? Are you the owner? Sir, sir, do you rent out your house for parties? How much do you get? In view of this, was it worth it? He the owner, officers? Yes? No? Oh, come on, the public has a right to know. If he's not the owner, how come he gets in?
If I'd said anything, it would have been, I get in because it's bad and strange.